Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Here we are, last week of 2021, and still an uptick in organizing. What the UAW is trying to accomplish in Washington State, shoring up our supply chain, what the Biden administration is doing. And today on the show, the Kentucky AFL-CIO and the Transportation Trades Department of the Labor Federation. Welcome to the Monday, December 27th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and the platform known as Stitcher. We have two guests on the show today. We are going to check in with Bill Londrigan. Bill is the president of the Kentucky AFL-CIO. Website is ky.afl-cio.org. And I figured we ought to bring him to the show because Kentucky was hit really, really hard by a series of tornadoes just a couple of weeks ago. And of course, as union members, we all come together to support each other in difficult times. And the Kentucky State AFL-CIO, along with the Greater Louisville Central Labor Council and United Way of Kentucky, all got together to provide assistance to union families who have been impacted by the recent storms. And we're going to give you the details because these people are going to be hurting for a whole long time. Liz Schuler, president of the Labor Federation, said the following: the tornadoes that ripped through several states have left a trail of devastation and heartbreak. Our thoughts are with the dozens of families who lost loved ones, including the many workers at a candle factory and an Amazon warehouse who were killed. From the rubble of this disaster, union members will do what we always do: roll up our sleeves, get to work, building stronger communities. Union members know the power of the bond we share is there to rely on in the difficult days ahead. With each ensuing extreme weather event, we are reminded that the climate crisis is not just a future problem. It's happening right now. The labor movement will continue to center those impacted by climate change in our work toward a clean energy future built by good paying union jobs. And this came from the U.S. Labor Department. They announced, and this was just about a week and a half ago, $8.3 million in funding to the Commonwealth of Kentucky to support disaster relief employment after that series of deadly tornadoes. So a lot of assistance, a lot of money coming in, and Bill is going to talk about how that will be divvied up and how the union, various unions in Kentucky, are helping. He's going to give a shout out to the ones that are really, really at work 24/7 right now. Later in the segment with Bill, we'll talk about organizing. You know, there's a whole lot of that going on. I got a great story out of the University of Washington I'm going to get into, and we'll just talk about what's ahead for the legislature in Kentucky for 2022. Greg Regan will be joining us later in the show on behalf of the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO, TTD.org. Three things we're going to get into. Number one, the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. That's the bipartisan infrastructure bill that is now law. We'll just run down some of the historic provisions, like $550 billion in new across-the-board infrastructure spending, five-year reauthorization of our highway, transit, and passenger rail programs, largest investment in Amtrak, historic levels of funding for ports and waterways, airports, air traffic control facilities, all with labor protections. Another topic we're going to get into is the Build Back Better bill, which is definitely stalled in Congress. Many are saying it's going to be taken up, and perhaps Joe Manchin will get back into the negotiations on that. And the Transportation Trades Department is of the opinion it's a missed opportunity in transportation if the Build Back Better bill is not enacted. And he'll elaborate on that. And lastly, we'll get into the supply chain congestion, the role of government versus private industry. And he's going to focus on what's called precision scheduled railroading, or PSR. And this is essentially what happened to the railroad industry when you have these giant hedge funds that have taken over so many companies and they've essentially whittled them down to nothing. And this is hurting our supply chain. So Greg Regan will button up things with that as our second guest on the show. Speaking of the supply chain, Pete Buttigieg, the transportation secretary, is awarding more than $241 million in grants to bolster U.S. ports, which is part of the Biden administration's near-term plan to address America's clogged supply chain. The money is being made available to 25 projects in 19 states. And next year, the amount of money for port improvements will nearly double to $450 million in grants a year for 5 years under President Biden's new infrastructure law. Buttigieg said U.S. maritime ports play a critical role in our supply chains. These investments in our nation's ports will help support American jobs and increase efficiency, which means a faster delivery of goods to the American people. Biden chimed in on Wednesday, touting the coming grants as one of a series of efforts that will alleviate supply bottlenecks. He said, "We brought together business and labor leaders to solve problems, and the much-predicted crisis did not occur. Packages are moving. Maybe in some cases not as fast as some would like, but they are moving." The grant money includes $52.3 million to help boost rail capacity at the Port of Long Beach, California, with a new locomotive facility, 10,000-foot support track, and extensions of five existing tracks to speed up freight movement while cutting down the number of truck trips required to do that. Other recipients include Portsmouth, Virginia, $20 million. To help build out a supply chain for the offshore wind industry. Brunswick, Georgia, $14.6 million to build a fourth berth for cargo ships. Houston, Texas, $18.3 million to facilitate more export and import cargo by significantly boosting storage capacity at the Bayport Container Terminal. Tell City, Indiana, $1.6 million to construct a 40-foot diameter pier on the Ohio River. And lastly, Delcambre, Louisiana, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, $2 million for dock restoration and climate resiliency. So, they're putting the money in various parts of America to make America move, and that's coming right from the Biden administration. The majority of research scientists and engineers at the University of Washington have filed a representation petition to be certified as a new bargaining unit affiliated with the United Auto Workers. The research scientists and engineers are vital employees who work on critical issues from coronavirus to climate change. They're seeking compensation commensurate with their contributions, job stability, career development and advancement opportunities, and improve policies against harassment and discrimination. Now, get this. The compensation right now is low enough that qualified workers are being pushed out of the career they want in order to pay for housing and child care. That's how bad it is. In fact, one worker, Dan McCloy, he is with the Institute for Learning and Brain Sciences. He said, "I want researchers to have a voice in determining their working conditions without fear of retaliation. That's why I want a union." Comment here from a research scientist Ivan Cruz at the Seattle campus. Ivan said, despite the organizing challenges presented by the pandemic, we found ways to have thousands of conversations with our colleagues across the university system about unionizing. We've heard over and over again from researchers that they're struggling, that they want to make a more diverse and equitable university, and they would rather be focused on doing their amazing research than worrying about job security or terms of employment. So we look forward to working with the administration to negotiate a great contract and build an even more equitable university where all research scientists and engineers can thrive. You know, there was a time in America that a researcher or a scientist would not even think union at all. At all. It just didn't happen. Most of the time because they were highly paid and they were respected on the job. Not the case anymore. Not the case. So hats off to the UAW and what they're doing over at the University of Washington. That's certainly one to watch. Pilots who fly for Sun Country Airlines, all members of the Airline Pilots Association, have voted 93% in favor of ratifying a new tentative four-year agreement. The PAC brings the pilots' salaries, retirement, and other work rules in line with their peers in the industry, and the agreement was reached after 7 months of negotiations and apparently reflects the growth and modernization of Sun Country in recent years. The council chair, Brian Lethert, said, "We are proud of this contract that reflects the work that we have done and the contributions that we have made to help the airline grow." And one more here. Last week, the Writers Guild of America East has announced that its 160 members at Vice Media have ratified a new three-year contract that sets an increased minimum salary of $63,000 and provides minimum yearly wage increases ranging anywhere between 3 and 3.75%. The union previously had four contracts at Vice representing four main editorials, but the new contract combines them all into one agreement. Executive Director Lowell Peterson said, "Thanks to a unified and strong union, workers across Voice will now work under one collective bargaining agreement, this new contract, and its substantial gains are a testament to the Vice Bargaining Committee's diligent efforts to address the concerns and aspirations of workers at a company that continues to grow within the ever-shifting media landscape." Well, he's right about that. All right, we have to take a quick break. When we come back, Bill Londrigan of the Kentucky AFL-CIO.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans. And we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers. And we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at afge.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our Raising Wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And, of course, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number one. And welcome back to the show, Bill Londrigan. Bill is the president of the Kentucky State AFL-CIO. Website is ky.aflcio.org. And when you say Kentucky, you think about the series of tornadoes that hit a couple of weeks before Christmas, leaving so many communities completely devastated. And when that happens, union brothers and sisters come together. So that's why we're checking in with Bill Londrigan today. Bill, welcome back to America's Workforce. How are we doing? How was your holiday?
My holiday was great. I had a great holiday with family, thank God. And, really good time. In spite of the, difficulties with COVID and stuff, we were able to, have a good time and make sure everybody was vaccinated properly. And we had a good one.
You weren't one of the thousands of people that got stranded Christmas Eve at the various airports around the country? You're not in that category?
No, not at all. No, this was pretty much stayed home up until yesterday. Which I didn't take any airplanes and actually drove to my sister's house. So no problems with me as far as travel was concerned. And weather was extremely warm for Christmas. I think it was the warmest Christmas I had on record in Kentucky. Other than the normal stuff, it was a wonderful time, and hope everybody got to where they were going safely.
I hear you. Talk to me about what happened there with these tornadoes. And I mean, they were devastating. The pictures, the video is just amazing. Let's start where you were. This was on December 10th, and these were very, very powerful tornadoes. Hit a number of states, but Kentucky seems to have been hit the hardest. Now, you were a couple hours away, you were telling me? Explain that to me.
Well, yes, the tornadoes hit mostly south of where I lived, up near Frankfort, near the capital, and the closest ones that really touched ground and did damage were in the area of Warren County, where Bowling Green is located, where Corvette plant is, and several other large facilities, and we've got a lot of union members down there that work in that area as well, and the devastation was just so wide. Spread. It was unprecedented in the amount of area that was covered by the tornado from far southwestern Kentucky, the area of Mayfield, which in Graves County, which was pretty much destroyed, the whole little town of Mayfield. A very, really sad situation there. We were able to survey the damage and put together some relief efforts that are still ongoing, of course. This is not going to be anything that's going to go away very quickly. When you, as you said, saw the damage from the photographs and video, it really is. It's breathtaking, and the length of the destruction and the amount of folks that were killed, as well as those that have been left homeless. It's just been it's been unprecedented in the length and the amount of damage that's been done. And normally, with a tornado, you get some, hits here and there that, may wipe out a particular neighborhood or community. But this one had such a wide swath that just wiped out so many, many areas that, it's going to take a long time and a lot of work and a lot of effort to help folks get back on their feet. We immediately put together a disaster relief fund. We raised money from our affiliates and from various unions around the country, put together a program where our unions and our members could sign up and identify the needs that they have. And then we would respond accordingly to try to supply those needs with whether it be vouchers or money for lodging at hotels, money for food. And one of the sidelines, of course, as you recognize, that this was, you know, happened during the, you know, holiday season, during Christmas time. And of course, so many children left without toys and Christmas. And fortunately and very positively, so many people stepped up and so many of our unions stepped up. Our Elevated Constructors Union had several truckloads of materials coming out of Chicago. We had IBW local out of Portsmouth, Ohio, bring the trailers down with necessities and toys. We have another vehicle and trailers that came down from Toledo, Ohio, just from Atlanta, Georgia, from the UA. The outpouring has just been phenomenal. I mean, you know, we've had people bringing supplies and necessities and to warehouses that are just stocked and packed to the top. You know, they're almost out of space in some areas because of the amount of goods and materials that are being delivered into these facilities. So just a tremendous outpouring in spite of all the, you know, destruction that's taken place. There's, you know, that so-called silver lining where people have stood up and really, really rose to the occasion to try and assist their, you know, fellow workers and fellow citizens of Kentucky. It's been just really phenomenal. We've been so blessed with our resources that have come in for our union households and members that we've identified. We've had union members that have, you know, lost loved ones. We've had union members that have obviously lost their houses, their vehicles, all their possessions. And, you know, we've been just trying our best to, you know, make sure that people are getting the services that they need. We've been working with the United Way. We've been working with FEMA, any of the agencies that are local, interacting with those folks. We've had several of our own AFL-CIO representatives on the ground for several days. Our own Secretary Treasurer Jeff Wiggins is from that area, from all the way down in Paducah, which also close by was also damaged, and he's been down there this entire time, making sure that we've interacted with folks and making sure that we take care of the needs that people have. It's just been phenomenal. But, you know, as we've toured the areas, you know, you can recognize just how devastating the impact has been on communities across Kentucky, and just recognize that this is not going to, you know, go away anytime soon, and that people are going to need a lot of help getting back on their feet and, you know, getting back to, you know, some semblance of normalcy, and maybe, you know, try to get them back into homes that's, you know, they're going to have to rebuild or build from scratch since they've been, you know, just about totally wiped out. It's a sad situation, but one I think that has really brought a lot of people together and, you know, really showed the love and compassion that the people of Kentucky and the United States have for their fellow citizens and for our union members and our union family have come together in a big way.
You mentioned United Way of Kentucky, and it seems to me that a lot of the donations that are being collected right now are being coordinated under the Union Disaster Relief Fund. And I'm going to give an address. This is courtesy of the National AFL-CIO. Those of you listening, and we're podcast on 6 platforms, if you can help our brothers and sisters in Kentucky, just mail a check to this P.O. box. It's 4653 Louisville, Kentucky. All right, just put on the envelope Union Disaster Relief and mail them to United Way of Kentucky, P.O. Box 4653. That's Louisville, Kentucky. The zip is 40204. 40204. And hopefully those checks will keep on coming, because this is going to take years. You know, you mentioned Mayfield, and that brings to light the candle factory. And I know you heard this story. And Amazon is, I'm going to throw Amazon in there. They're not in Kentucky. I believe that was in Indiana where.
No, that was in Illinois, actually.
Was that in Illinois? Okay,
yes,
in
sir.
Illinois. And my point on this, the workers were in that candle factory. They were in the Amazon warehouse, and they were told by their supervisors, hey, you know what? This is kind of going to blow over. And in Amazon's case, apparently, they don't allow smartphones, so they weren't even getting some of the weather alerts. It's just ridiculous. I mean, it's sweatshop conditions. But in the factory, they were told that if they left, they would be fired. Bill, what are the repercussions on that? I have to ask that question.
Well, I would say there could be several repercussions, Flash, as far as violations of the general duty clause of the OSHA, under workers' compensation, under a number of different laws that could impact this situation. Really disheartening, knowing that the workers, most of them are, paid minimum wage in this facility. You know, under the OSHA regulations and laws, of course, we have the general duty clause to provide a safe workplace. When you look at the situation that occurred and the fact that the factory, the supervisors, the managers of the factory knew that the tornadoes were, in fact, heading directly in that direction, that the warnings were, widespread. They had plenty of time to allow folks to go home. They decided that keeping them there working was more important than trying to save lives. And we did lose lives at that facility there in the candle factory, unfortunately. And, they basically didn't have the preparations necessary to provide a safe workplace. No access to any, credible fallout shelter or sheltering situation that would have protected the workers. They were all, jammed in or told to go into the lavatories, into the bathrooms there. That was their supposed, safe place. And, of course, that was totally inadequate. So the whole situation obviously was not handled properly. The workers were put in dangerous conditions. They should have been, given the opportunity to leave without being threatened with their jobs. Just unconscionable how the employers just treated these folks. You take a, look, every one of them that comes in there is paid the minimum wage to start out with, as is $7.25 an hour, which is, obviously poverty level wages. Some of them obviously get some increases for, working night shifts and stuff, but it's still, some of the lowest paying jobs, available. Very, very bad situation, including the fact that there were, county detainees, inmates from the county jail, also leased out to the employer to work in this facility. And in fact, one of the deceased was, in fact, the deputy that was in charge of monitoring the inmates from the county jail while they were in the facility, unfortunately, and sorry for his passing. It's just totally, unbelievable situation when you consider the fact that, we hear all this talk about people not wanting to go to work and not working for minimum wage jobs and stuff. Well, you had a whole, slew of people in here, over 100 in the factory, who were working at those, very low wages, and being put obviously in a very, very dangerous situation. So it really calls into question the approach that the employer had taken and whether or not they were really, fulfilling their obligation to provide a safe workplace. And certainly something that, needs to be reviewed. And I think our state OSHA is looking at that as well as federal OSHA. And I'm sure that, people will be considering their legal options as far as civil liability is concerned, in addition to the other, regulatory issues that will come up.
That's something that would probably happen in a third world country. But the United States of America, come on, you got to be kidding me. And being paid minimum wage and being told in the middle of a tornado, you better not leave, otherwise you're going to lose your job. Hard to believe that happened. Well, I'm glad that the proper authorities are going to look into this, and this needs to stop. This needs to stop.
You know, we also looked into how widespread this practice is as far as leasing these county inmates to local businesses. So that's something else that's obviously come to light now. This practice that obviously is not in the best interest, we'll say, of the workers and the inmates, probably.
Bill Londrigan joining us on our live line today. Bill is president of the Kentucky AFL-CIO, ky.afl-cio.org. They also have a presence on Facebook, and you can follow them on Twitter. AFL-CIO-KY is their handle. Greg Regan, on behalf of the Transportation Trades Department, will be joining us later in the show. We'll be back right after this.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And, of course, you can check us out on six different platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always like those five-star ratings, so keep them coming. Let's go back to our live line. Reconnect here with Bill Londrigan. Bill is with the Kentucky State Labor Federation, ky.afl-cio.org. Bill, how long have you been the president of the federation down there?
Oh, I was first elected in 1999. So if we do the math, I think that is 22. We're coming up on 22. So I think 23 years coming up on 22. Gone by in a flash. No pun intended. an honor, of course, as you know, to have that position, to be elected by your, you know, fellow workers here in Kentucky is just unbelievable. And I certainly every day is just a new day for working people. Never a dull moment. And never know what you're going to, you know, deal with that particular day. So very exciting. And like I say, just an honor to be able to, you know, raise my voice for those that don't have a voice.
And that's a tough state to work in politically. You got Rand Paul and Mitch McConnell as your senators. You're a right-to-work state. I have to ask you, though, about organizing, because we're seeing an uptick in organizing everywhere in the country. And I'm just so happy to sit in this chair every day and talk about it, because it's long overdue. And we've got a union friendly guy in the White House. You got Marty Walsh as Labor Secretary. So what's the status in Kentucky? Let me tell me some good news, Bill.
Well, good news is there's folks that have been energized, that younger folks seem to be more cognizant of the fact that organizing a union is their only way to a decent standard of living and decent wages and respect and dignity on the job. You know, we've had people working at the different universities across Kentucky. We got a university campaign going on with the United Campus Workers, which are affiliated with the CWA. They've made gains at several universities, University of Kentucky. They've got chapters at Morehead State. They've got chapters in Western Kentucky University. So, you know, all over the state. And the nice thing about it, or the interesting thing, shall we say, is that these organizations there at the universities are across the board, from the janitors to the professors are joining together in one union to raise wages and working conditions. And of course, like you say, it's difficult in Kentucky like it is in every other state, but you know, folks are actually coming together around a lot of different issues. We've had workers walk out of fast food restaurants down in Louisville. We've had you know, workers walking out and trying to organize in logistics facilities across the state. So lots of activity going on. And you know, when you look around and see the, you know, fact that the workers at Starbucks are trying to organize or have organized, you know, folks in the media, journalists across the board here, folks are just seeing the only option that they have is to come together as one and speak with one voice against management and to try and improve their living and working conditions through collective bargaining. And as you know, that's the goal that we have, to have a union contract at a workplace so that workers have rights on the job, so that those rights are protected in a binding document and a binding contract, something that no at-will employee in the United States of America has enjoys at all. So the difference between those workers without union contracts and those union contracts and those with union contracts is just this huge, wide, you know, valley between what they can get on the job and what rights they have compared to what rights workers have that organize. So I just see this, you know, new enthusiasm. And as I said, you know, we're looking at a lot of younger workers that are starting to realize, hey, you know, I don't have much options when it comes to my workplace, my working conditions, whether I'm going to be harassed or discriminated against on the job, or whether I'm going to be fired illegally for exercising my rights to form and join a union of my choosing. Workers are starting to realize that, you know, all the propaganda that they've been fed for the last 40 or 50 years about unions is not true. That there is a new growth in the you know, positive support, approval ratings that we usually use that have just, you know, skyrocketed here in the last couple of years. We're reaching some of the highest levels of approval ratings in decades. You know, I think it was 65-67% folks, you know, in spite of the attacks by management and the wealthy and the elite, are starting to recognize how important unions are and how they need one, how they want one, and how they're going to get one, whether it's Amazon, whether it's Starbucks, whether it's McDonald's, whether it's universities, whether it's journalists, media outlets. I mean, you know, in my, you know, 40-year tenure in the labor movement now, I don't remember a time when we've had such, you know, enthusiastic support for organized labor and recognition by workers of the importance of having a collective bargaining agreement. So super optimistic about the you know, coming events that we're going to face and the growth of trade unionism and the positive and approval ratings that are happening that are going to translate into more people getting involved with unions. You know, it was an interesting study that I did a long time ago, was comparing the approval ratings of unions in Canada versus the United States. And when we saw the approval ratings of unions in Canada, of course, it's really, really much higher. And as a consequence, it seems so is the union density rate in Canada. So I definitely think that if, you know, more folks are starting to recognize that they need to have a union, that they are going to benefit from having a union contract, that public opinion is getting much more approval rating for unions. And when that happens, I think that the wave of unionism is going to just begin to build even higher and higher. And where it'll crest, I don't know. But I can tell you now that I'm more optimistic about folks joining and forming unions of their own choosing than I have in many years.
Bill, to your point, I did a story at the top of the show about some research scientists at the University of Washington that are now affiliating. They're trying to bargain with the UAW because of what you just said. They're being treated like garbage. And Bill, you know this. There was a time in America, I mean, a scientist, a researcher getting involved in a union, that didn't happen. That didn't happen. But the day has finally come, hasn't it?
It absolutely has. You know, when people, you know, are not getting the remuneration, the respect, the job security, the retirement security, the safety, so many things on their jobs now that they've been beaten down over, you know, they're basically starting to rise up. I mean, you know, throw out another real interesting one, the cannabis workers, you know, in those states that have legal cannabis. I mean, they're organizing with the UFCW and the Teamsters all over the place. I mean, it's just a phenomenal growth in that one rising industry. And as you mentioned, these professional and technical folks, you know, as they've, you know, wanted to shy away from unions because they had them extra degrees and they had some sort of bargaining power on the job. But of course, that's all dissipated in our greedy economy and that's based on, you know, maximizing profits for Elon Musk and these super wealthy individuals like Jeff Bezos. I mean, people are starting to recognize that, you know, there's something really out of whack here.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
Our economy is being based on, you know, how few people can become billionaires while everybody else gets treated with lousy wages and working conditions has certainly come to the fore. And I think folks are, you know, finally waking up and saying, hey, you know, we can do this together if we work together because we have a common interest, a commonality that is going to, you know, bring us together to form and join unions of our choosing and to speak in one voice against the folks that have the control and the wealth.
Amen, brother. Bill, I'm going to have to wrap it up there. Bill Londrigan on our live line. He is president of the Kentucky AFL-CIO. He's had that position since 1999, and he's going strong. Okay, buddy. You take care. Enjoy time off with your family and your friends, and I'm sure we'll talk in the new year, okay?
Hope so, and my best to you and everybody there, and for a happy new year. And I appreciate all your work, and keep the faith and solidarity forever, my brother.
Quick break. When we come back, Mr. Greg Regan on behalf of the Transportation Trades Department of the Labor Federation.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialist, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Iron Workers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 iron workers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union iron workers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our iron workers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two right now. Welcome one of our regulars, Greg Regan, On behalf of the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO, TTD.org is their website. And when you talk about transportation, everybody's excited about the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, bipartisan legislation that has been signed into law. And that's a really good thing. There's a lot of good components, and Greg's going to run down a few of them for us. Hey, Greg, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good, 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 good. Good holiday and everything. How did that go?
Yeah, it was excellent. Got to see some family, of course, safely. So it was great.
Boy, that's the key word, safe. You got to be safe today in the environment. My gosh. All right, let's get into the infrastructure bill. I know you're excited, and there's a couple things that pertain, obviously, to transportation. Maybe you can run them down for us. Go ahead.
Sure. I mean, quite simply, this is the largest level of investment in our nation's infrastructure in our history. That is certainly true. It's the biggest investment in Amtrak in the history of the railroad. It is the largest one-time investment in transit in our nation's history. We have a huge amount of money that goes into bridges and roads. So this is a real opportunity to rebuild, and it's something that we've been calling for decades. So we're excited about it.
Do you know anything about a timetable here? I mean, it's a lot of money. There's a lot of components to it. The new year is right around the corner, just a week away. Just wondering what the take is.
Yeah, I can tell you that the administration is 100% focused on getting this money out and getting it out in a effective and responsible way, and doing it as soon as possible. You know, I would expect early on, I mean, there are some deadlines built into legislation. I would expect early next year to start seeing some guidance in terms of how the money is going to be allocated. Most of them is going to be through competitive grants. So, there's going to be they'll have to release some parameters for how, like, for instance, how the transit money, what the expectations are. And then different transit agencies will bid on that money and based on what their needs are. And I know that the DOT and the White House are focused on how do we streamline this with the appropriate checks and balances and make sure that the money gets out as quickly as possible.
I know one of the components deals with Amtrak, and you and I have talked about this because here's an agency that people like, and it's very, very strong and very popular in the Northeast Corridor, and I'm hearing some good things, and some of that might spread over to the Midwest. Do you know anything about that? Is it kind of premature on expanding Amtrak? What do we know?
Yes, I think expanding Amtrak and modernizing the system national network is a key priority for Amtrak and for us. There are some big ticket items that need to be done that have languished in part because of a lack of funding. Gateway being one of them. The Baltimore, the BNP tunnel in Baltimore. That's again, that was completed during U.S. Grant's first term, so it could use a facelift. And they're also trying to replace their entire AM fleet, the non-Estela train. So those items, if you just added all those up, it could probably take up the $66 billion that is being allocated here to Amtrak. That is not, I think, the strategy that they're going to pursue, because what we want to do is have this be a springboard towards creating a true modern national passenger rail network, and that includes making investments throughout the country, seeding those expansion of new routes between high density corridors. So I think we're going to see this spread out in a thoughtful way that is again the beginning of a transformation of the railroad across the country.
Other countries have done it. There's no reason the United States of America can't do it. No doubt. All right, let's move on to the supply chain. From what I'm gathering, it's easing up. What's your point of view on this right now? Is that the case?
Yeah, and we all knew it would. I mean, there was no way that, given the actions that were taken both by the administration and by the operators to address the immediate backlogs, we were going to see that stuff ease up. The problem, as I see it, is making sure that we address some of the structural problems that led us to this crisis. The business practices of the trucking industry that led to 90% turnover rate in that industry, making sure that precision scheduled railroading that is reined in so that we have a freight network that is fairly serving the entire country and serving all the shippers who need that vital link for their goods. And that stuff has been decades in the making. And, you know, we need to have some real oversight to bring those back to a responsible governing of what is a, frankly, it is all privately operated and all runs for profit, but they provide a critical public service as well. So I hope that, you know, even after we remove all those containers at the Port of LA, Long Beach, and other places around the country, that is certainly not the end of this conversation, because we need to start seeing some changes so that we prevent the next crisis.
Greg, if you don't mind, can you explain for our listeners this PSR, that's the Precision Scheduled Railroading, on how that has made matters worse?
Yes. So Precision Scheduled Railroading, it is, for lack of a better term, it's the hedge fund takeover of the freight rail industry. It's a shift away from sustainable growth across the board and from their common carrier obligations to a focus on quarterly returns and increased profitability in the short term. What it means practically is a gutting of the workforce. We saw 20% of freight rail workers were laid off in the 4 years prior to the pandemic. We also saw a disinvestment in their capital, so mothballing of rail cars. We've seen closing of rail yards. Anything they can do to reduce overhead and reduce their costs in order to increase their profits. And what that results in is a completely inelastic system, a system that was at its limits prior to a surge. And then when we saw a surge, they were completely ill-prepared to be able to deal with it.
So basically, get workers out of the way and sell off the assets, which is basically what hedge funds do across America. Very, very common, very sad at the same time. All right, Greg, one more issue here. Build Back Better. I know it's been a little difficult here in the last week and a half, especially with Joe Manchin's comments. But how do you feel about this? What's the position of the Transportation Trades Department?
We think this bill needs to get passed. And I know that, obviously the White House and the leadership in the parties have been, or at least the Democratic Party, have been committed to getting it done. This is a major stumbling block. And I think the way that we get through it is by continuing to talk about the benefits this legislation would bring to people in every state across this country. Just from a transportation perspective, there's $5 billion in there that would go through the Commerce Department to address the supply chain crisis, for instance. There's more money in there for training of transit workers. There is a lot of good policy in there that is going to make a difference in people's lives. And, you know, we're not going to get there by pointing fingers. We're not going to get it across the finish line by sort of playing a blame game. It's going to be done by talking about the benefits and discussing about how this addresses the needs of the American people. And, you know, yes, it's a stumbling block. We're going to have to go to the drawing board. I'm certain that it's going to continue to change. But, you know, based on the conversations I've had with folks, nobody's given up right now. And they still feel, you know, reasonably optimistic, as optimistic as you can, that they're going to find a way forward here.
Isn't it troubling, though, that it doesn't have any Republican support, although the American Rescue Plan didn't have any Republican support? But does that concern you at all?
It concerns me that there is one party that seems to be completely blind to the needs of the people in this country. That concerns me. And it concerns me that they're willing to, in my view, try to sink a key piece of legislation to try to sink the president's agenda here. You know, I also think it creates a stark contrast between what the principles of the two parties are. It was great to have a bipartisan infrastructure bill, and I think it was my hat goes off to all the Republican senators and representatives who worked hard to get that done. However, I do think that, you know, this is a sort of prove it moment. This is what we believe in. This is what we're going to fight for. And then, you know, if you're worried about your elections down the road, go and campaign on that and talk about your accomplishments. And that's how you win elections. People want to see things getting done.
Greg, I think it's funny. A lot of Republicans, especially with the American Rescue Plan, even though they didn't vote for it, they took credit for it in their respective communities. I guess you probably are not too surprised by that, are you?
No, I'm not. It's been the same game we've seen for for years now. But you know what? As long as people are seeing the benefit, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I hear you. Greg Regan, president of the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO, TTD.org. You can check them out on Facebook, Transportation Trades Department. Follow them on Twitter at TTD AFL-CIO. Real simple. You take care, my friend, and we'll be talking in the new year, okay?
All right. Sounds great. Thank you.
That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, our independent labor voice, Tom Buffenbarger, and the stagehands, Local 140. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.